Good. Okay. So now the Gemara says 5 lines from the bottom, Vakati Shlomo Gazar. But what do you mean that it was established by Talmidim of Hillel and Shammai? Shlomo Melech made the Gezeira. The Amar of Yudamar Shul, Vashash Tikin Shlomo Erevin and Atil Yadayim, when Shlomo established Erevin and Atil Yadayim, meaning Shlomo created, a prohibition of you know, carrying in a chatzer without Erevin. And he established also Netilat Yadayim. So he says, Yatztaba Kova Amra, Benim Chacham Libecha Yismachli Bigamani. My son, if you're smart, I'm also happy. Chacham Libeva Samachli Beva Shibachor Fidavar. Like, my son is so smart, I'll, answer those who, insult me. It means HaKadosh Baruch Hu is speaking and saying, I'm getting a lot of nachas from Shlomo HaMelech, from his Gezerot. And these were the Gezerot that he made. Now, Rashi brings down 2 lines from the bottom. He says, if you look 2 lines, it says, Dechtiv, Uvi'izein v'chikir, that izein v'chikir would mean, you could think, to listen, from the ear, but the Gemara says, Sha'asa aznayim l'Torah. He made ears, to the Torah. It means, handles to the Torah. Kolomar siyag varachaka, kekfifazu, like a basket, shnot l'otabi adayim. Like, a basket is easier to carry around when you have handles on the basket. So he says, and you don't touch it. So it means he facilitated the observance of the Torah through his gzeirot that he made. In other words, even though it's a little more difficult to comply with it, but ultimately it makes the Torah easier to fulfill. So the question is, again, who is mitakein the gzeirot with Yadayim? So was it Shlomo HaMelech, or was it Talmidim Hillel B'Shamai? So the Gemara says on the top line, Tedfav Ben Aleph, Ata Shlomo Gazar L'Kadshim. Shlomo Melech made a gezeira that the hands are sheni l'tuma vis-a-vis Kadshim. So if I'm eating Kadshim, or coming into proximity with Kadshim, I have to be careful. But he says, Va'atu inu gazar af l'truma. And then the Talmidim Hillel and Shammai, they would go there even for truma. And today, we wash our hands before we say amotzi, because Chazal want us to always be prepared, so that everybody will be prepared when they eat the truma. Okay, let me just pause for 1 second, and then I'll open up the mic, everybody, for discussion. 1 second. There's a piece here from the Aladaf. He says, Tosos and Erevin on Chaf Aleph asks, why only these two enactments are mentioned when in fact Shlomo also enacted Shniot L'Arayot? Shlomo, the prohibition against marrying certain relatives. In other words, you have certain arayot that the Torah prohibits, and then you have further relationships that are prohibited on a rabbinic level. So the Gemara learns that Shlomo Melech made those. So he says, moreover, the Chasam Sofer asks, why Hashem rejoiced specifically over Shlomo Melech's enactments when he was not the first one in history to institute safeguards to our laws? Find Moshe Rabbeinu had already instituted certain Yisurim, and we find that Adam Rishon instituted an Yisur to prevent a violation of Hashem's command. Like Adam Rishon says to Chava, lo tigubo. In other words, he says, Hashem says not to eat it and not to touch it. So we see the idea of harchaka is introduced by Adam Rishon. It didn't work out so well. And the Nachash came and pushed Chava into the fruit and said, you see something, nothing happened. So when you eat it, nothing will happen. So Hashem commanded Adam not to eat from the Yetz Hadad, but Adam, when speaking to Chava, had a forbidden to touch. So in answer, the Chasam Sofer explains that the institution of the Yisurim per se was not cause for rejoicing, even though it was important to safeguard the Torah, and acting additional Yisurim has a certain drawback in that some people will invariably find the additional prohibitions too difficult to comply with, and causing people to violate Yisurim dampens any cause for rejoicing. So he says, Shlomo Melech's enactments of Erev and Atil Yadayim were different from others, and that Shlomo provided the means of a permit for his Yisurim. Shlomo did not merely order an end to all carrying between private domains. Rather, he said, if one wishes to carry between domains, he may do so as long as he places an Erev. In other words, he's got an Yisur, and he's got a way out of the Yisur. So I'm living in a chatzer with different people, so I can't carry to the chatzer. But if I make an Erev chatzer road, I can carry. He says, similarly, he didn't prohibit touching through with one's bare hands or require one to immerse in the mikveh. He instituted the method of Metilas Yadayim so that one need only wash his hands before coming into contact with Truma. So he's saying, your hands are tamei, so you wash them. These enactments were caused for special rejoicing. Shlomo made it feasible for everyone to comply with them. All right, now, I want to miss a big mastop to Yosef Rachmani. He had a bris for his son on Friday. So big mastop to Yosef. And I can't see you, Yosef. I hope you're out of that car, though, and back into a house. Anyway, if you want to send some pictures, I'd love it. And if you want to let me know if I can disseminate it, that would be also nice. Okay, who's got any questions on anything we did so far? Anybody? Everybody good? Okay, everybody mute themselves a bit. Okay, Abe, you need to mute yourself.
What can the other Shlomo make about relatives?
In other words, like there, let's say I can't, on a Torah level, I can't marry my sister. So, but then there are other relatives, like more removed, that Shlomo HaMelech prohibited. You understand what I'm saying? Like different degrees of consanguinity. In other words, I don't remember exactly how it works, but he said, I don't know, anyway, but he extended it out. Shniot la rayot. All right. Abe, I need you to mute yourself now, Abe, okay? Abe, mute yourself, and Yosef, okay. Okay, and Robert, you also need to mute yourself. Okay, let's go further. Now, let me see who else is here. All right, let's go further. All right, so we're on the second line on Tetvav Amud Aleph. Second line, Tetvav Amud Aleph. Gufa Amrabi Bar Shmuel, Shmona Asar Gazru, Ushmona Asar Nechleku. So Shmuel says they had 18 gezeirot, and there was disagreement between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai in all 18. So the Mishnah had said that on these days, the votes for Beit Shammai were more numerous. Tamid Beit Shammai were numerous, and they passed the gezeirot. V'hatanya hushvu. But a different price, it says they all were like unanimous. They agreed on it. Not that like Beit Hillel was, you know, at counter purposes with Beit Shammai. So the Gemara says, bo bayom nechleku l'machar hushvu. Like, on day one, they had a machloket. The next day, they were all online, and they were all good with these 18 gezeirot. All right? Now, Gufa, on the fourth line, Amar Rav Huna b'shloshim makomot nechleku Shammai v'Hillel. The Rav Huna says that in three instances, Shammai and Hillel had a machloket. So, we're used to having many machloket between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, Tamidim Hillel and Shammai, but Shammai and Hillel only had three machlokot. Only three instances they had a disagreement. Now this is somewhat tangential. It came up in the conversation. We're moving away from the 18 gzeirot. We'll come back to it. But with reference to that, though, the Gemara says Hillel and Shammai had three machlokot. And here comes one of them. And all three are going to come up. Shammai Omer Mikav Chala Behillel Omer Mikabayim. Now, the issue is, there's a mitzvah of hafrashat challah. If I'm making dough, I have to separate some of the dough and give it to the kohen. That's one of the matnot kahuna. So today we don't give it to the kohen, we just take some dough and burn it. But there's a chiyuv to take off the challah. So the question is, how much dough do I have to have in order to become obligated to make hafrashat challah? So it's talui with the pasuk in Chumash. Now this topic is the most complicated topic because there's a lot of different shiurim. Like they had the midot midbariot, they had the measures they used in the midbar, the midot yushalmiot, the measures they lose later on in Yerushalayim, and midot siporiot, later on they use in Sipori. But we're going to try to make this as simple as possible and move on with this. Now, the pasuk says, "Reishit arisotechem chalat terimu truma." The first of your dough, from the first of your dough, you should take chal. Now, what is the way Chazal understand it? The first of your dough means the amount that you got with the man every day in the midbar. So everybody got like this wonderful package of food at their entranceway of their ohel. So that was the portion they got. Now the Torah says they got an omer. So the Torah says, "Va'omer asirit haifahu." The omer is one tenth of an eifa. The omer is one tenth of an eifa. Now, the machlok between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, the first instance is it that the whole enchilada I take challah from, or since that represented two meals, maybe I take challah from half of it. You got it? So in other words, I have to take challah, my rishon rosh techem, I get my package delivery of two meals every day at the entranceway of my tent, so do I take challah only if I have that whole blob, or even if I have half the blob, I would do it. Now, look in Tosfos quickly, the third Tosfos. Everybody with me in third Tosfos. This is Birushami Mefaresh, Tama de Shami Behilel, Mishum de Eifa, Shmona Sarkabim. So Yushami explains the reason for Shammai and Hillel is an Eifa is 18 Kav. An Eifa is 18 Kav. He says, V'asirit milabar, hainu shnei kavim. Now, if you remember, there's another way to calculate percentages according to Chazal. And let's just go over. There's milagav and milabar. So let's say I have 100. Let's say I have 100 items, and I want to take a fifth, or 20%. So if I take it milagav, so what's a fifth of 100? 20, right? A fifth of 100 is 20. But there's another way that Chazal have, milabar. Let's say, and then if I take a fifth of 100, it's 25. A fifth of 100 is 25, because when I'm done with all my separation, I'll have five piles of 25, and then 25 will be a fifth of the total. You have it? Everybody got it? Milagav and labar? Everybody right or not? You're good?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is going, now when you do milabar, you just subtract a number. So let's say it's a fifth, you make it a quarter. So it's a tenth, you make it a ninth. That's doing milabar. So here, so the eifa is 18 kav, right? The eifa is 18 kav, and now I want to take 10%, but milabar. So I'll take one ninth of that. So one ninth of 18 is 2 kav. One ninth of 18 is 2 kav. Okay, we got it. Now, he says, "Well, toshir tzarich lafrish chala lehillel. V'shamai savar tzarich shtei chalod laomer she'osim yimenu." Still in the Tosos, shtei achilo achapa boker v'achapa erev u'chashir achila achad chashiv shamai isat midbar. So again, so Hillel will figure that it's 2 kav is the minimum shear, right? 2 kav is 10% of 18, right? The way we did it, which is like 1/9 of 18. And Shammai is going to figure that it's half the amount, only one meal. So 1 kav. Everybody, okay, let's go back in the Gemara. So now, let me read again. So the Gemara says, Shammai omer mikav chala. Shammai says, 1 kav is enough to obligate me in hafrashat chala. V'hil omer mikabayim. And Hill says, I need 2 kav to obligate me in the chala. V'chachamim omrim, lo kidibri ze v'lo kidibri ze. The Chachamim hold like neither one, ila kavu mechsa chaya b'chala. Now, when the part that gets tricky with this, when the Chachamim say a kav and a mechsa, they're referring to, in other words, Hillel and Shammai are referring to the midot midbariot, the midot that existed in the midbar. And the Chachamim are referring to the midot Yerushalmiot, in other words, the midot got larger. So it's not comparing like the same units with one another. So, but it basically means that the Chachamim, they agree fundamentally with Hillel that it has to be 10% of the whole enchilada, but the 10% is going to be a regular 10%. So it won't be like the ninth, it'll be the regular 10%. So it works out, and again, all the shiurim are very complicated, but it works out, the Eifa is 432 beitzim. An eitz is 432 beitzim. So 10% of 432 beitzim is 43.2 beitzim. So that's the minimum shear we hold at lahalacha for hafrashat chala. And the mnemonic device to remember it is the word chala. Chet lamed hey. Chet lamed hey. If you do the gematria for chet lamed hey, it adds up to 43, right? 43, and you have to remember the fifth at the end. So 43 and a fifth eggs. Okay, so let's go back in the Gemara. He says, "V'chamim omrim lo k'divrizeh v'lo k'divrizeh el akav u'mechsa chayav b'chala." That a kav and a half is chayav and chala. But then they're using the kav and a half of the midot Yerushalmiot. So it's really basically 10% of the old midot. Now mishehigdilu hamidot. Now then the midot changed again. They switched they changed the shiurim for all the midot, and now they're doing midot tziporiot. Amru chamesh revayim kema chayvim b'chala. They said that five revayim, which really means five log, is chayv and a chala. That's the same shear, the same shear. It's like things equal to the same thing are equal to each other. Rabbi Yossi omer chamesh p'turim chamesh v'od chayav. Rabbi Yossi holds I can't have exactly five kav. Rabbi Yossi holds similar to, like it's coming up now with Hilchot Pesach, we have the idea of Nitkatnua Shiurim. So Rabbi Yossi holds that the eggs in his time were smaller than the eggs in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. So he says you have to add a little bit more. You have to add a little bit more. Okay, so again, let's just review again, and then we'll take some questions. So we're going, we said there are three machlokot in Shas, in all of Shas, between Hillel and Shammai. And one machloket is the amount you need to, in order to be chayiv you in challah. And Shammai held one kav, Hillel held two kav, and then, but we hold, the chachamim hold, lo kidibri zeh v'lo kibri zeh, they hold 10% of the kav, which comes out to 43.2 beitzim. And so if you have 43.2 beitzim, then memela, then you chayiv in challah. Okay, let's see, whoever has got a question can unmute themselves now, okay? Anybody have questions? Everybody good? Everybody good? Speak now or forever hold your peace. Okay, I'm going to move on. All right, let's see further. Now, the Gemara says, Ve'idach, now, machloket number two, between Hillel and Shammai. He says, Ve'idach, Hillel mer, melohin maim shuvim poslim in a mikvah. Now, Hillel said, now, when you have a mikvah, we need mei gishamim, we need rainwater to start the mikvah up. So this, the minimum shiur is 40 sa'a, and 40 sa'a, the way I remember, is it 3 amma by 1 amma by 1 amma. That's the size of a person could fit in. The space of 3 amma by 1 amma by 1 amma would be 40 sa'a. So once I have the 40 sa'a, I can add all sorts of water to it. Once I have the threshold, I'm good. But before I get the 40 sa'a, so I need mei geshamim. And if I get mei she'uvim is water that's been handled in a keli. In other words, like I drew the water up. So then I could passel the mikvah. But how much mei she'uvim are going to passel the mikvah? So Hillel says, melo hin mei she'uvim. Hillel says, like a complete hin of mei she'uvim. Now a hin is a biblical measure, he says. And it's the equivalent of 12 lugim or 3 kabim. Okay, so Hillel here is not using the normal shiurim that were customary bisman chazal. And it was in the Chumash you see a hin. Like we say in Musaf, right? Like you have Ravida hin, you know, like it mentions all the shiurim with the korbanot. So it means that he holds that 12 lugim or 3 kabim of maim shuvim would pass on the mikvah. Okay? Shushu post on the mikvah. He says, Shechayav adam lamar b'lashon rabo. Why did Hillel use the word hin that we'll see more in a few minutes? Hin was like an out of use term in his time that we'll have other pshatim. But a person is obligated to say something the way he hears it from his Rebbe. So that's the way he heard it from Shammai of Avtalion. So that's the way he said over the halacha. In other words, just exactly the way he heard it. He says, Shammai omer tishakabin. So Hillel says that 12 lugim or 3 kav is enough to passel it. Shammai says 3 times the amount. In other words, it would be like 36 kavim would be enough to passel. So here, Shammai is more mekil. Shammai is more mekil here. He says, V'chachamim omrim, lo k'dibri zeh v'lo k'dibri zeh. Chachamim don't agree with either one, and we'll see in a minute what the opinion of the Chachamim is. Ad shabau shnei gardim yishar ha'ashpot b'Yerushalayim, until these two weavers came from Shar Ha'ashpa of Yerushalayim, from Dung Gate in Yerushalayim. So I don't know, in Eretz Yisrael now we have a Shar Ha'ashpot. I don't know if that Shar Ha'ashpot is the same as this Shar Ha'ashpa, but means that they were just, in other words, Simple Pshat is, they were just weavers, and they came from a very, you know, not the most prestigious address, you know, Shar Ha'ashpa, right? And they came, he says, Ve'idu Mishum Shemayim Avtalion. They came and they testified that Shammai of Avtalion said Shishlosh Lugimayim should be in Poslam in a mikvah. In other words, so these two Gardiyim, who were like very, you know, like you think, gee, you know, we only accept the Torah from the greatest Gedolim or something like that. These two weavers walked in and they came from Shar Hashpa and they said, we heard from Shammai of Avtalion that he said they were the Gdolim of the previous generation, that 3 Lugimayim should be passed to the mikvah, the Kimu Chachamim Medivrayim, and the Chachamim validated it, and that was the way that went. Okay, now, let me just do a little piece of Torah on this, and then we'll pause. 1 minute. All All right. Now we said about the hin. Now the Ravid, this is again from the Aladav. The Ravid in Eduyot explains the term hin used by Hillel was considered odd because the Mishnah generally uses measurements of kav or lo rather than hin. In addressing this peculiarity, the Mishnah explains that Hillel used the term hin rather than three kabim because his teachers used that term. That's the way I had explained it previously. Now the Rambam offers a unique explanation of this Mishnah. He says that Hillel's teachers Shmaya Baptalion were gerim, converts, and they came from a nation whose people were not able to properly pronounce the letter He. They would pronounce the letter He as an aleph. Thus, Shemaya Baptalion would pronounce the word Hin as In. as In. So Hillel, in deference to his Rebbeim, would also pronounce the word as In instead of Hin, because Chayav Adam Lom Arb L'Shon Rabo. That's really something. In other words, they couldn't pronounce the word properly. That's the way Hillel was doing it. Now, the Vilna Gaon explains that the Mishnah is similarly to the Rambam, but he rejects the notion that one is obligated to mispronounce words just because his Rebbe did so. He says, the Vilna explains that the Mishnah is not addressing the fact that Hillel used the word hin, but the fact that Hillel preceded the word hin with the word malo, the full hin. By definition, hin means a full hin. It's seemingly redundant for Hillel to stress malo hin, just as Shammai states non-kavim, without stressing it must be, you know, malo tisha kavim. So the Mishnah explains that Hillel used the term Elohim because of his teachers, since Shemai Vavtalion cannot properly pronounce the word Hin as the Rambam. In other words, the Vilna Gaon is working off the Rambam, but making a shinui. He says, in Achinami, Shemai Vavtalion couldn't pronounce the word, you know, like normal, the way we would normally pronounce it. So they were concerned that their statement would be taken to mean, Ein Mayim Shuvim. That Shuvim water doesn't disqualify a mikveh. So to prevent this misunderstanding, they stress Malohin Mayim Shuvim. In other words, they're not pronouncing the word right. So they said Malohin, like so you shouldn't be misled by our pronunciation of the word. A complete hin, in other words, so even though they were saying the word in or ain, but Malohin, that's the way they pronounce the word. Even though Hillel had no problem pronouncing the word hin, he did not deviate from his teacher's terminology of Malohin. So according to the Vilna Gaon, the key is the word Malo. Okay, who's got questions, comments, or thoughts on anything we did so far? Anybody? Yeah, Yosef, what do you got for me?
Can you explain this in Machlokin again? If you have 40 sa'a of mikvah,
okay. Now, again, so it means I don't have 40 sa'a. I'm gathering the rainwater. I have 35 sa'a, and then I add a certain amount of mayim she'uvim, so now the whole thing is possible. Once I have 40 she'uvim, then I mean 40 sa'a of mayim megishamim, then I have nothing to worry about. You got it?
Once you have the 40, you're
then,
40.
Then I'm good. Then I'm good to go. Yeah. Okay. All right.
I have a question about this drawn water, but it relates to the end of the daf from this morning. There's this whole discussion at the end about if you put a vessel under a pipe and you intend to collect the water, that's no good. Yeah. But if you didn't intend to collect the water, you can use it.
Yeah.
I don't get what's the distinction? It's the same water whether you intend it or you don't.
Okay. I think that's a totally different sugya with nothing to do with what we're discussing now. I believe.
No, but it deals with withdrawing water to put into the ritual bath.
One second.
At the end of today's right at the end of today's daf.
1 minute. So if it's at the end of today's daf, we'll come to it then, right?
No, to the daf from Sunday. You're doing Shabbos.
You mean from Friday?
No. You're doing Shabbos daf.
Is it tomorrow's? Is it daf Tet Zion?
I'm talking about today's Sunday daf.
Daf Tet Zion.
Right. Yeah. It's the one. It's right towards the end in base. It goes into this whole thing about if you put something under a pipe to collect water and you intend to do it, it's unfit. But if you didn't intend to do it, then it is fit. What? I don't get the distinction. It's the same water.
Yeah, I don't think it's telling you. Let me see. They can't talk about Sinor.
It starts with Sharshia.
Okay, 1 second. Let me look quickly.
That part. It's in Sunday's
talk. I haven't looked at it, Robert. I can't answer the question. Okay, I'm sorry. Okay, let's come on.
Okay, we'll leave it for tomorrow night.
Well, that's for your homework for you. Okay, now the all right, now what, any other questions on what we did? All right, now let's take a look. All right, now I'm going to move on. All right. All right, now, so we did two machlokot. Now we're up to the third machloket. Everybody with me? Okay. Shammai Omer. Now this, Dapyomi people will remember this. This was from Masechet Nida, in the first Mishnah of Masechet Nida. So it says, Shammai Omer, kol anashim dayan shaitan. Now, a woman who's a Nida is ipso facto tmeya. Like for us, it just relates to relations between a husband and a wife. But there's Tuma that's connected with a woman who's a Nida. So a Nida, if she touches like Truma or Kachim, you know, it's bad news. Then that's the end of the Truma and the Kachim. So let's say a woman inspects herself and now she finds blood. So do I have to be concerned that it didn't happen just Monday morning at 9 o'clock, but maybe she was already Tumea beforehand? So Shammai Omer kol anashim dayan shaitan. Shammai says they just have from the time that they know with certainty going forward, then they're tamei. I don't have to go back in time. V'Hillel Omer mi pekida lepekida v'afilu yomim harbe. Hillel says, let's say she inspected herself 5 days ago and she was tahor, and now she inspects herself and she finds that she's tamei. So I have to retroactively assume that she became tamei right after the last inspection, and anything she touched in the last 5 days became tamei. He says, but Chachamim Omrim, the Chachamim say, Lo Kedibrei Zeh, Lo Kedibrei Zeh. They don't say like either Hillel or Shammai, Ela Me'eit Leit Memai Leit Dei Mipkida Pekida. That 24 hours are going to cap the last, in other words, let's say she inspects herself on Monday morning, and then she inspects herself on Friday morning. The way I remember, the women who were busy with Truman Kachim would inspect themselves, I think, every morning and every evening. But let's say she inspected herself on Monday morning, and now she inspects herself on Friday morning, and she finds that she's Tamea. So we're not going to go back more than 24 hours. In other words, 24, we're going to cap it at 24 hours. He says, and if she inspected herself within the last 24 hours, we're not going to go back to 24 hours, go back to last inspection. That's the way the Chachamim have it. All right. So those are three machlokot between Hillel and Shammai. Now, the Gemara says, the two leka, are there no more machlokot between Hillel and Shammai? Va'ika, Hillel omer l'smoch, v'shammai omer shlo l'smoch. This machlokot between Hillel and Shammai, whether we do smicha on korbanot on yantiv. Now there's a machlokot in the Gemara where the person could bring private korbanot on yantiv, but he could certainly bring like his obligatory korbanot on yantiv, and he, you know, obviously he needs to do that, and you know, the shalmei simcha and things like that. So there's a question: are you allowed to do smicha with the animal on yantiv? Now smicha, just like you can't ride an animal on Shabbos or yantiv, and that's a gzeira shema yitlosh. By riding the animal, I may break off a branch and come to hit the animal. So as an extension to that, I'm not allowed to lean on an animal on Shabbos or Yantiv as well. So there's a machloket between Hillel and Shammai, whether you do smicha on Yantiv. So Hillel omer l'smoch. Hillel holds, there's no other way out of that. In other words, the smicha is something the Torah requires. So you're going to go forward and do the smicha. We're not going to prevent, you know, in other words, we're not going to allow the Gzeira d'Rabbanan to block my performance of the korban the way I should normally bring it. He says, Shammai omer shlo l'smoch. Shammai says, no, you know what, you'll do the smicha before Yantiv begins. You put your smicha is putting your hands on the head of the animal, leaning against it. You do that before. But Hillel holds, takeif l'smicha shchita. Hillel holds that once you do smicha, I have to shecht it right away. So I can't do it before Yantiv. So that's the machloket. So how come that's not listed as one of the machlokot between Hillel and Shammai? So kikam Rav Huna hecha deleka pluta de bravata bahadayu. When Rav Huna mentioned there were three machlokot, he meant three machlokot where other gedolim didn't weigh in. He says, in other words, but where other gedolim weighed in. In other words, this is a big machloket about smicha. So he doesn't list it as one of the machlokot between Hillel and Shammai. In other words, there's other, you know, other chachamim involved with it. So then the Gemara says, but we have another one. Va'ika botzer legat, Shammai omer huchshar, v'Hillel omer lo huchshar. So then there's a case of a botzer legat. A botzer legat, a person is harvesting grapes for, and he wants to get the grapes and presumably process it into wine. And then while he gathers the grapes, like the juice from the grapes ooze out. So the juice could be one of the machshirim, right? In other words, like if I have one of the seven fluids, and if I'm happy with that fluid, so then it becomes a machshir and permits the food to, you know, to is susceptible to tumah. So there's a machloket whether the juice that squeezed out of the grapes, in other words, if I want the juice, then it's considered to be one of the machshirim. If I don't want the juice, it's not. So here I'm just collecting the grapes, so I would think I don't want the juice. But the machloket is I have a waterproof container. We'll have this in tomorrow's daf, which is Monday's daf, we'll discuss it. In other words, if it's a waterproof container, so then I'm trying to save that juice. So I'm saving that juice, so I want that juice. So then I'm happy with that juice. So he says here, Abos v'gad Shammai mer huchshor. Shammai says that that juice, excuse me, one second, right. So he says that, so since the juice, I want the juice, so the grapes are now susceptible to tumah because the juice is touching the grapes. So again, so Abos v'gad Shammai mer huchshor, v'hil mer lo huchshor. Hil holds it's not muchshor.
So I'm sorry, what are you using these grapes for? What are the grapes for?
Ultimately,
do you want to squeeze the grapes?
You want to process it into wine. You want to process it into wine.
So you waste, basically, if it's being squeezed out, it's being wasted.
Well, except it's in a waterproof container, so it's not being wasted.
No, that's not me.
Right, so that's what it's doing. So the Gemara says, Bar mine dahi, tahatam kashat le'il l'shamay. The Gemara says, except for that case, they did have a machloket, but Hillel was silent, you know, in the face of Shammai's arguments, meaning that Hillel seemed to go over and agree with Shammai. So Shammai says that the grapes are a hukshar, and it seems like Hillel agreed with him. So even though he did have a machloket, but since Hillel eventually agreed with him, it doesn't count in one of the machlokot. Okay, who's got questions, comments, or thoughts on anything we did so far? What do you got for me, Fern?
I do.
What do you got for Fern?
We have all over Shas, Beit Shammai Amrim this and Beit Hillel Amrim that.
Right.
So why are we limited to, let's say, we include the last one, five?
No, remember, there's a difference between
Hillel and Shammai, this Hillel and Shammai alone.
Right, we're doing...
Right. Got it.
Got it, Fern? Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Good job.
Any other questions? Everybody good? Okay. All right, let's go on. All right, now, the Gemara, again, we're picking up elements that we had discussed along the way. In other words, in the previous discussion of the Gemara. So the Gemara says, Yossi ben Yoezer ish tzereda, v'yossi ben Yochanan ish shishlayim, gazu tumah al eretz ha'amim, v'yakle zechuchim. So Yossi ben Yoezer and Yossi ben Yochanan are like two of the zugot, like there are five sets of zugot, early heads of the Sanhedrin. Hillel and Shammai were the fifth. If you look in Pirkei Avot, they have them. So Yossi ben Yoezer and Yossi ben Yochanan, this is, again, we got into this, we were discussing about the 18 Gzeirot. This is not part of the 18 Gzeirot, but in the discussion it came up that they made a Gzeirah for Tumah al Eretz Ha'amim. There were goes there that land outside of Eretz Israel is ipso facto considered to be Tameh. So if I walk in Eretz Ha'amim, I'm Tameh. If a clod of dirt touches from outside of Eretz Israel, touches it. And it's related because outside of Eretz Israel, they weren't so careful with how they buried people. They didn't mark off the graves. And some of the graves got plowed over. And so everything outside of Eretz Israel was considered to be Tameh. There's a whole question in Halacha, how Kohanim are allowed to live outside of Eretz Israel. Since you have Gzeira that all land outside of Eretz Israel is Tameh, and Konim have to, you know, observe and keep themselves in a state of Tahara, how are Konim ever allowed to leave outside of Eretz Israel? Anyway, so that's it. And Baal Klei Zechuchit, in addition to which, so glass is not mentioned in the Torah. So only those things that are Tameh are mentioned in the Torah, the Kelim that are Mekabel Tumah, but glass is not one of the Kelim that are mentioned in the Torah, but there goes there that glass is susceptible to Tumah. Okay, we'll discuss more on each one of these, all right? So the Gemara says, "V'rabbanim d'shmon mishana gazur." How can you now, focusing on Tumah Eretz Ha'amim? How can you say that Yossi ben Yoezer and Yossi ben Yochanan were the ones who made that gzeira? The Chachamim of the 80 years were the ones who made the gzeira. But Rokhatad the Rav Lehinim Elocholam Shikol Nibro. I didn't hear too many amens.
Because we're on mute.
Yeah.
Because we're muted.
But I see your mouths. I see your mouths. The lips didn't move. Okay, now, let's see. Now, so the Gemara, so it says here, Rabban Shmuel Shana Gazur, Damar Akanak Shechala Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yosi Shalchulo. When Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yosi was ill, they sent to him, Rabbi Amor Lanu Shnayim Ushoshet Dvar Mishamar to Mishum Avicha. Tell us two, three things that you said in the name of your father. So he says, Shalach Lahem Kachamar Abba. This is what my father Rabbi Yosi says. Me'av Shmonim Shana Shlocha Rav Abayit Pashtamachud Arushal Yisrael. That 180 years before the Korban Abayit, and we know the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed around the year 70, so 180 years before that would be around 110 BCE. So he says, like, I would say Roman influence began to be felt in Eretz Israel. Like, this is one of the Chashmonaim. So, like, you know, the Roman influence was felt. He says, Shmonim Shanan Shalucha Rav Abayit, 80 years before the Korban Abayit, which would be around 10 BCE, Gazru Tumal Eretz Ha'amim V'Yakle Zechuchid. They made a gzera on Tumal Eretz Ha'amim and on glass. So that's the two gzera we're looking for. So that's taking place 80 years before the Korban Abayit. And it's going to come out that that's after the time of Yossi ben Yoezer and Yossi ben Yochanan. We'll see in a minute. He says, Arba'im Shanat Shalok Korav Abayit, 40 years before the Korban Beis HaMikdash, Galtazla Sanhedrin. The Sanhedrin went to Galus. And the seat of the Sanhedrin is in Lishkat HaGazit, in this chamber of hewn stone. And the Sanhedrin voluntarily left that location and went to Galus. He says, V'yashvala b'chanuyot. They went to a place called Chanuyot. Chanuyot means stores with Chanuyot. So then the Gemara interjects, L'mai hilchata, like what halacha does it relate to that they left the Lishkat HaGazit? Amar Rav Yitzchak bar Avdimi, Lomar shlodamru dinei kenasot. That they stop judging cases that involve penalties. So the Gemara's dinei kenasot, does that make sense? Why would they not judge cases with penalties? Ela ema shlodanu dinei nefashot. Right, they stop judging dinei nefashot. In other words, it means the Bezdin that judges let's dafyomi people. How many dayanim do we need to judge dinei nefashot? A capital.
23.
Exactly right, Yosef. So it means that but a Bezdin of 23 can only judge a capital case when the Sanhedrin of 71 is in Lishkat HaGazit. So once the Sanhedrin leaves Lishkat HaGazit, now none of the courts are authorized to judge Dinei Nefashot. So they wouldn't judge Dinei Nefashot. So I think things got so terrible, it sounds a little counterintuitive, but they decided just to leave because like the standards were going down so much. He says, now, but the point we're interested in is these two gzeirot. V'chitema b'shmonu shana nami inu havu. Maybe you'll say, in those 80 years, so Yossi ben Yoezer and Yossi ben Yochanan lived in that 80-year period. V'atani, we learn in the Braisa, Hillel b'shimon, Gamliel b'shimon, Nagunasi utan, b'fnei abayit me'ashana. That the heads of the Sanhedrin, he's giving all the Nisim. In other words, you have, you know, Hillel and Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. So that's the 100 years before the Korban Abayit. V'il Yossi ben Yoezer, ish sereid of Yossi ben Yochanan, habukad mutuva. There was Yossi ben Yoezer and Yossi ben Yochanan are before Hillel and Shammai. So clearly the before that 80-year period. So habukad mutuva. So turn page. So the Gemara says, Ella, so we're on Amud Beis, 15b. Okay, everybody turn. Okay, Ella, Atu inhu gazra gusha l'srof v'yavira v'lo klom. So the Gemara says, like, the gzeira went through different time periods. That the initial gzeira was a gusha l'srof. That, in other words, if a clod of dirt from outside of Eretz Israel would touch Truma or Kachim, so it has to be burnt. He says, the avir of Eloklum. They didn't make any gezerah concerning the avir. So it could be a clod of dirt from outside Eretz Yisrael that's brought into Eretz Yisrael. Because I can't imagine that you'd bring, it could be truma to being taken outside of Eretz Yisrael also. Kachim you wouldn't take out. But it should either be a clod of dirt brought from outside of Eretz Yisrael into Eretz Yisrael. And if the clod doesn't sound like most hygienic, but if it would touch the kachim or the truma would passel it. Or the Kohen has Truma with him, and now the Truma comes into contact with the dirt, so it has to be burnt. He says, Va'avira v'lo klum. But the Avir, there was no Gzeira. Let's say I'm riding a horse, I'm in a carriage, so there's no Gzeira concerning the Avir outside of Eretz Israel. But atu rabbanan the arbaim shana, the shmonim shana, and then later on the chachamim during the 80-year period that we discussed, gazur avira l'tlot. There goes there that if the truma is, you know, it comes to contact with the avir, so that means, let's say I have some truma with me and I'm riding the horse, so then it is suspended. I don't burn it, but I don't eat it anymore. So the Gemara, so that's our answer. It's a two-stage gzeira. So on line three, lemeimra the chad gzeira tahav l'sreifa. So that implies that there was one gzeira in terms of burning. In other words, they made a gzeira concerning the gush, the clod of dirt, that if the clod of dirt touches it, so it has to be burned. V'ha'amar ilfa, but ilfa said earlier in Daf Yudalid, ilfa, yadayim tachad gzeira tan l'sreifa. That when it came to Yadayim, Yadayim means that they would go there, but the hands are Sheni Latuma. He says, Yadayim Tchila Gzeira Tan Lesreifa. From the get-go, they made the Gzeira, and Mela now, if you would touch, you know, Kanshim, you have to burn it. He says, Yadayim Hu Tchila Gzeira Tan Lesreifa. So that implies that only Yadayim was initially went into Sreifa, Hamini Achrin alone, nothing else. Nothing else, you know, was the initial gzeira was for Sreifa. Now, one second. Let me just make sure I have this right with this. One minute. Yeah. Right. Okay. Yeah. So I said kachim. He says here the truma. So it means the hands, if they would touch truma, that from the get-go, the gzeira was that it had to be burnt. That's what he's saying. Remember, Shlomo Melech made the gzeira concerning kachim. So it must be talking about the gzeira from, you know, from Tamidi Hillel and Shammai. Okay, so again, so back in the Gemara, he says, so he says, Hamidi Achrin alone, so implying nothing else. Ella, so now the Gemara says it's more finessed. Ella atu inu gazur agush letlot v'avi ribalo klum. So the Gemara says that Yossi ben Yoezer and Yossi ben Yochanan, they made a gezeira concerning the clod of dirt letlot, to suspend it. So if the truma touches the clod of dirt, I don't eat it and I don't burn it. He says, v'avi ribalo klum. They didn't make any gezeira concerning the avir outside of Israel. Then the Chachamim came in the 80-year period, and they made a gzeira that it has to be burnt if it touches the gush. And they upped everything. In other words, everything went up one notch. See, the initial gzeira was gush, you're tola, and avir, you're nothing. The second gzeira is gush, you're burning, and the avir, you're tola. So that's where we think we're going. So the Gemara says, "Va'akati beUsha Gazur." The Gemara says, "Wait, but this Gezerah was also enacted in Usha. Usha is one is the location in the Galil. It's one of the places where the Sanhedrin went to Galus. We said there were like 10. The Gemara learns in Rosh Hashanah there were 10 places that the Sanhedrin went to, and one of the locations was Usha. So the Gemara says, "Does anybody remember a Takana from Usha? Who can help me out? Dafyomi people." Yeah, give me a takana from Usha. Let me hear. Anybody have any answers on this? What's a takana of Usha? Anybody remember? You all know this. Anyway, so the Gemara says, I remember that what one takana was, you only give 10% to tzedaka. Remember, it's one takana of Usha. Okay, all right, let's see back on the Gemara. So the Gemara says, V'akatim Usha Gazur. The Gemara says that, but the Gezeira was made later on, and so when this is like after the Korban Beis HaMikdash, when the Sanhedrin was in Usha, Ditnan, because we learn the Mishnah Masechet Taharot, Al Shisha Sveikot Sorfin HaTruma. For seven situations, you burn Truma, meaning the Truma is going to come into contact with something, and based on Halacha, there's like a question over the Truma, you have to burn it. He says, and this is from the Mishnah, Al Safek Beta Pras. So, Beta Pras is different definitions of what Beta Pras is. The Mishnah has like three definitions. So, Rashi here, let's see the Rashi. One minute. Where is it? Yeah. So, Rashi in the first narrow line says, Gon Truma Shinachas Beta Pras to Hu Sadesha Abad Bakever. So, Rashi takes it that it's a field that somebody was buried in the field, but I don't know where in the field he was buried. And then Tosfos, though, doesn't like Rashi's pshat on this. And Tosfos, in the second very wide line, says, B'sadesh nech rash ba'kever, a field that a kever was plowed over. Well, anyway, so if let's say some truma is brought into that field, so mamela, I have to burn the truma. V'asafek afar haba mi'eretz hamim. And if I have, you know, the clot of dirt from outside of Eretz Israel, so I don't know, maybe there's like pieces of dead body in the dirt, because, you know, outside of Eretz Israel they don't bury so well, and they don't mark the graves, and the graves get plowed over. But that's the key, the second one. V'asafek bigdayam ha'aretz. And then bigdayam ha'aretz, like the person's not so from, so we have to be concerned that his wife, who would be Anita, you know, sat on the begadim, and now the begadim have tuma. So, and when it says safek, it means I'm concerned, like, with the status of these items. He says v'asafek kelim anim. If I find a keli in the street and then truma comes into contact with it, I have to assume the worst, that it's tamei. V'asafek arokin. If like this spittle, you know, so the spit, like, let's say from a zav, you know, like it has tuma in it. So I have to, if it comes to contact with the truma, I have to be concerned with that. V'asafek mei raglei adam shekenegim mei raglei behema. And if a person's urine, it's like body fluids, you know, the person's, I think, a zava, mitzora, I think anita also. So their fluids have tuma with them. So if I have human urine, and even I'm not sure it's human urine, it might be animal urine, because it's near the animal urine, but nevertheless, if avadai maga'an, avadai maga'an shehu safek tumatan sorfin er truma. So in all these cases you burn the truma. So then the Gemara says Rabbi Yossi Omer afal safek maga'an b'rishut yachid sorfin. Rabbi Yossi says even if it's a safek, if you touch the rishut yachid, you have to burn it. V'chachamim omrim b'rishut yachid tolin b'rishut rabim tor. And the chachamim say in the rishut yachid I'll be tola, in the rishut rabim is tahor. But the bottom line is v'amar ula elu shisha sfekot b'ushet kinum. So Ula says that all of those takanot were established in Usha, and one of the takanot we just mentioned was the tumah of Eretz Amim, the dirt from outside of Eretz Israel. So it's getting more complicated. So again, we have Yossi ben Yoezer, then we have the Chachamim from the 80 years, then we have Usha. So who established what when? So Ella atu inu gazur agusha litlod v'avir below klum. So the Gemara says the initial gzebra by Yossi ben Yoezer and Yossi ben Yochanan was agusha litlod. If it touches the dirt, the clot of dirt, so it's held in suspension. You don't burn it, you don't eat it. V'avir below klum, nothing on the avir. V'atu rabban the shmona shana gazur edivi litlod. And the Chamim said that they're both going to be tolling. They'll be tolling even for the avir. V'atu b'usha gazur agusha litlod v'avir kid the koi. And then the Chamim came in Usha and established with the gushi going to burn it. And the avir we're leaving alone. Okay, who's got questions, comments, or thoughts on anything we did so far? Everybody good?
So what's the timeline? Who lived first?
The first one is Yossi ben Yoezer and Yossi ben Yochanan Yerushalayim. Hillel and Shammai, they live, you know, like around 100 BCE, right? Right. No, I didn't say right. One second. 1 minute. Hillel and Shammai, we said, 1 second, 80 years before.
We're after.
No, Hillel and Shammai is, right, Hillel is 80 years before the Korban Abayit. Hillel is 80 years before the Korban Abayit. So Hillel is living around 10 BCE. Okay, that's Hillel.
And then
Yossi ben Yoez and Yossi ben Yochanan are earlier. They're one of the five Zugot. And Hillel is the fifth Zug. And then if you look in the beginning of Pirkei Avot, it mentions all the Zugot. So they're earlier. Then you have, you know, the Chachamim, the Shmon Mishana. We don't know which Chachamim are the ones who made it, but during that period of time. And then we have Usha later on. Usha is after the Korban Beis HaMikdash, all right? Okay?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Anybody else? Any other questions? Okay. Let's go further, and we'll go in for the kill. All right. You know, Yosef, I'd love to see you. How come I don't see your camera, your picture?
I don't know.
What? I don't know. There must be.
I don't know.
There's a tab there. Click one of the tabs so I could see you. All right. Now let's see. And Ed, I don't see you anymore either. And David, I'd like to see you too. All right. Let's see further. All right. Let's go in for the kill. All right. Now, klei zechuchid ma'itama gazerbu rabbanan tuma. Now we said another gzeira was for glass vessels. And again, this is one of the gzeirot by Yossi ben Yoezer and Yossi ben Yochanan. So why would, in other words, on a Torah level, glass has no tumah, right? It's not mentioned in the Torah. So why would they go through tumah? So Amar Biyochan Amar Shlakish, who will chila briyatam in a chol? Glass, you know, a big component in glass is dirt, whatever. So he says, Shavin Rabbanim Kichli Cheres. The Chachamim decided that we're going to
treat sand.
What?
Sand.
Sand, right.
Yeah, not dirt, sand.
All right, sand. Okay, sand. Okay, so the Chachamim decided that we're going to treat it like Kli Cheres, like an earthenware vessel. So an earthenware vessel is Mekabel Tuma Mitocho. And let's see. So he says, so elamiata lo tehilin tarub mikvah. So if that's the case, it should not be susceptible to tahara in a mikvah. An earthenware vessel doesn't have tahara in a mikvah. Not everything, the mikvah doesn't work for everything. In a kli cheres, it doesn't do anything for a kli cheres. So he says, alama tanan, so how can we learn from the Mishnah Masechet Mikvaot, ve'elu chotzin bekelim? The following items are chatzitzas. So again, when I put something in the mikvah, it can't have a chatzitza. Chatzitza is an interruption. If something's on the surface, if it's dirty, like let's say you're toveling kelim, so you have to make sure the keli is nice and clean. All the stickers are removed, everything is clean on it. So the Mishnah says the following things are a chatzitza in kelim. Hazefet v'hamor. Zefet is like the pitch, and the moor is, like they said, musk or whatever, b'chlei zechuchit. In other words, if those items are in a glass vessel, and it was a person with a glass vessel, he's makbid. He doesn't want those things to be on the vessel, so then it's a chatzitza. So the point of the Mishnah is obvious. If the Mishnah is talking about that I can't have a chatzitza, obviously it is susceptible to tahara in a mikvah. So the Gemara says, ha'chamayaskinan kion shenikvo v'hitif l'tochan avar. So he says the case that the Mishnah is referring to is where the vessel had a leak in it, and I plugged the leak with some lead. So since I plugged the leak, in other words, in Akinami, the glass vessel, based on this gezeira, would not have tahara in a mikvah. But in a narrow case, it could have tahara in a mikvah. And it could have tahara in a mikvah where the glass vessel had a hole in it, and then I plugged the hole with a piece of lead. He says, Rabbi Meir he da amar hakol lechachar mamid. Rabbi Meir says the status of the vessel rides and falls on the davar mamid, like on the plug. In other words, if I plug something, that's giving it the whole essence. So lead is obviously a metal. So it is. So then, under that circumstance, we would view the glass vessel as a metal vessel susceptible to tahara and a mikvah. The Tanya, we learn in the Brisa, klei zechuchit shenikvu ve'itiv l'tochan avar. If a person had a glass vessel that got a hole in it, and the person like dripped lead, like, you know, like molten lead, you know, you drip the molten lead into the vessel, Amar Shem Gamliel, Reb Meir Mitame, Reb Meir says that it's susceptible to tumah on a deraisa level. In other words, now it's like clay matakot. It's just, never mind the gezeira about clay zechuchit. It's subject to tumah on a deraisa level. But chachamim matarin. The chachamim say it's the way I'm going to learn pshat. You say it's tahor on a deraisa level, but it's still susceptible to tumah on a derabanan level. So the Gemara says elamiata on the top line on tetzayim. Elamiata loli tamu migaban. So if the whole reason why glass vessels are susceptible to this gezeira is because we're like analogizing them to clay cheres, earthenware vessels, so they should not be susceptible to getting tumah on the outside of it. A clay cheres is only becomes tameh when you put something in betocho, not on the outside. So the Gemara is going to pose a question on this. Okay, now let me see if I have a story, and then I'll see you all. It's so nice seeing everybody here. Maybe we'll talk for a minute. One minute. Today is Sunday, or Shabbos rather. Shabbos. Let me see.
Rabbi, can you explain what Rav Meir and Rav Shimon, what does that mean? Mitame and...
Again. So, according to the Tan Rav Meir, once I put the molten lead in the glass vessel, so now the glass vessel has a din of clay matakot, of a metal vessel.
It's metal.
It's not. We don't view it as glass anymore. Now it's a metal vessel. So now metal vessel is susceptible to tumah on a Torah level. And the Chachamim say, no, it's still only on a Drabana level, but it's tahor on a Torah level, but still susceptible to tumah on a Drabana level. That's what it's saying. All right? Okay.
Yeah,
okay, now let me see a story here. This we did with the olive and the hay. This we did already. All right, let me see here. one minute, I'm looking at the sheets here. Yeah. Yeah, he talks a little bit right here about Tumat Eretz HaAmim. Yeah, so he mentions that a Kohen is directed not to leave Eretz Yisrael to travel to Chutz La'aretz, and the Shulchan Aruch mentions it in two places. He says, Kohenim that already live outside of Eretz Yisrael have already come to contact with this impurity, therefore, being that this impurity is rabbinic in origin, they do not need to avoid further contact with impurity of rabbinic origin, such as this. Furthermore, the difficulty of the diaspora is also a factor in this matter. And then he says, the rabbis who introduced this decree created also some exceptions to the rule. If the impurity is rabbinic in origin and not scriptural in origin, such as our law, then a Kohen may depart to the diaspora in order to get married. Similarly, you may leave Eretz Yisrael to learn Torah. This is true even if there are places of learning in Eretz Yisrael, since one cannot learn from every teacher. The post can permit leaving Eretz Yisrael for medical issues. Some extend this permit leaving Eretz Yisrael for recovery as well. Part Eretz Yisrael for matters of respect to one's parents. The Ruch Shulchan writes, Kohen may leave Eretz Yisrael to visit the ill. Other matters of mitzvah are a point of discussion. Although this law is codified as cited earlier, many poskim rule that this decree is no longer applicable today. They base their view on the contention this decree was intended for the age when the Jews in Eretz Yisrael conduct themselves according to lofty regulations of ritual purity. However, today, when that is no longer the case, this decree is no longer applicable. Others argue the Shulchan Aruch records this law as not accustomed to cite laws that are not applicable, all indications being that the poskim who reference this law still see it as binding. Many temporary authorities are cited as ruling that today a kohen may not leave Eretz Yisrael unless it's for a mitzvah. All right, I think that's it for today. It was wonderful having all of you. Wonderful seeing all of you.
Anyone have-